Hello, this is Rich Tarani. Welcome to a TMCNet podcast. I am the group editor-in-chief of TMC and TMCNet, and I'm very excited to announce that today we have a big guest of honor here. We've got the VP of Sales and Marketing of 8x8, of course, the company behind the Packet 8 service, a gentleman by the name of Hugh Rees, who I've known for well over a decade. Hugh, please say hi.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Yes, this is Hugh Rees. I'm the VP of Sales and Marketing at 8x8.
And Hugh and I just saw each other on stage at an Internet Telephony Conference and Expo, and we had a very interesting conversation regarding a number of things in the industry, and the audience response was tremendous to that on-stage discussion, and I thought it made a lot of sense for us to continue the discussion in a podcast that people would be able to listen to on their iPhones and their iPods. And today is a great day for us to be doing this, Hugh, because you may or may not be aware, but Apple has just doubled the capacity of their iPhone and their iPod Touch.
So, I did not know that.
Yeah, so we can talk a bit longer.
All right.
As a result, so feel free to enunciate as you like, so as you see fit. So there are a number of things that I wanted to address, and one of the most important is the milestone that your company has recently passed in terms of virtual office customer base. I'm aware now that you are over 10,000 customers. Is that correct?
That's right. So it's actually 10,000 businesses. You know, sometimes it's a bit confusing when people say, you know, numbers of seats versus numbers of lines versus, and in our case, we tend to indicate number of businesses. So these are 10,000 businesses that we serve with our virtual office hosted PBX service. And just so people kind of get a flavor for, you know, how many lines that translates into, an average business for us is buys about 7.25 services from us, of which those services would be typically something like 5 to 6 physical lines, if you like, physical extensions or telephones, and then the remainder, the balance, are additional services or features like, for example, like a toll-free number, for example.
Interesting. So I guess this sort of success on the business space has been part of the reason for the good third quarter results that your company just had.
Yes, indeed. We had a terrific quarter. We had a record quarterly revenues for the company, $15.8 million in revenue. But I think something that we're even more proud of is that for the second time this year, we reported a quarterly profit, in this case, 2 cents a share, or $1.4 million in profit and income. I think that's somewhat unique in the voice over IP industry in terms of, as a pure play voice over IP service provider, being able to show profitability. In conjunction with that profitability, we're also showing free cash flow positive. In fact, for the last three quarters, been free cash flow positive. So this bodes very well for us, obviously in the present, but also for the future. We are anticipating that we'll be able to continue to show these types of results and to to show improvements in these types of results going forward. So we're very excited and feeling very, very confident.
That's great. So, in the VoIP space, there's a lot of excitement because there are a lot of there's just so much potential for new services to be added on. And recently, your company came out with a new service, and I blogged about it, and I just hadn't had a chance to try it. And I did get a chance to try your new mobile talk service at Internet Telephony Conference and Expo down in Miami about a week and a half ago, and I was blown away at the service. You want to talk to me a little bit and maybe explain a little bit to the listeners about the service?
Yes, absolutely. The Mobile Talk service is our first mobile offering, mobile sort of VoIP offering, but I think what people need to understand about this is it's designed for use on your mobile phone, typically a smartphone, although we will be introducing the product and service for less smartphones as we go forward. But basically, the idea is that if you're making international calls on your cell phone from the United States, so let's say you're calling the UK or France or Japan or from the US, if you use your phone to do that and you're, say, a typical subscriber of AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, if you simply call those international numbers, you probably will have noticed that you're paying something exorbitant, like $1.50 per minute or something like that. And your alternative in the past was really to use calling cards, which are very awkward to use. You've got to dial to an access number. You've got to dial the number you want. Then you've got to dial a PIN code. And even if you put them in speed dials and things like that, it's extremely awkward to use, and frequently the call doesn't go through or the quality's poor. So what we've done is we've come up with this application that you download onto your smartphone. It's a very simple download. We send an SMS to you. You click a link, and it's about a 300 kilobyte download. It's very quick. And once it's installed on your phone, when you dial an international number, instead of routing it through AT&T, Verizon, etc., it routes it to the Packet 8 network and uses the regular cellular network to complete the call. So you ask, you still have that airtime that's usually included in your bucket of minutes. But once it gets to our network, you're then paying the Packet 8 rates to the international destination. And those rates are typically in the 2 to 3 cents per minute, as opposed to the $1.50 per minute rates that I quoted earlier for the typical Verizon, AT&T, et cetera. So you get this dramatic cost savings, but with those dramatic cost savings is the ease of use, and it's the key aspect here is really this no change in user behavior. And what I mean by that is when you dial an international number from the United States, that international number typically begins with either 011 or it begins with a plus sign. And basically, anything that's in your contact database or any phone number that anybody gives you on a business card or whatever, you just dial it as normal. No change in user behavior, nothing to remember. And then the application itself intercepts that call and routes it over the Packet 8 network. So that it's a very simple product to use. And, of course, the other thing that we're very proud of at Packet 8 is the quality of that call. When you use calling cards, anybody that's used some cheap calling cards in the past, and as I have done myself, will probably verify that the quality of those calls can be really atrocious sometimes. In this case, you're using our high-quality routes, and they really are very good. The call quality is excellent, and the seizure rate, the ASR as it's known, the ability for the call to go through is also very high.
Well, I really think that the opportunity here is, it's ironic that the VoIP market has almost an arbitrage op here in terms of it's mobile arbitrage now, right, or calling card arbitrage.
Yes, it is. I think this opportunity will remain for quite some time. I don't believe I'm going to see the major cellular carriers dropping their rates down to 2 or 3 cents a minute. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to really get a foothold in terms of getting people using the Packet 8 technology who wouldn't otherwise do so. On the residential side, not everybody wants to sign up for a voice over IP service with an ATA type device, etc. But almost everybody uses mobile phones these days, and there's certainly a very sizable chunk of that market that make international phone calls. And we think that by this little application that is so easy to use and is a foray for us to capture additional subscribers that we wouldn't otherwise have reached.
And without getting into to go off on a tangent here, I think the opportunity for a company to, or a service provider, to drop a software application on a customer's device allows the service provider to do many things. In the future, that smartphone application could theoretically make calls over the Wi-Fi network just as easily.
Absolutely. I think that that's certainly coming. We believe that that's obviously a going to develop in the future as the Wi-Fi networks become and hotspots become more ubiquitous. But right now, we felt that, you know, by using, you know, limiting the application to, say, using just hotspots would make it too limiting for somebody.
Sure.
I mean, if, for instance, you're driving in a car, you know, the probability of you hitting a hotspot as you're driving along a freeway is pretty small. So we felt that wasn't quite the right application at this time, but I believe certainly going forward, you know, a dual mode type application would make a lot of sense, and that's something that we'll certainly be looking at.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. Now, you talked a little bit about broadband, and that reminded me of some of the news that was put out maybe 3 weeks ago, and that is regarding Governor Schwarzenegger and the California Broadband Task Force report. That's quite a mouthful. And that report basically talked about broadband access and how it will affect consumers and businesses throughout the state. I'm wondering, are there lessons that came out of that report? Why don't you talk a little bit about how you were involved and some of the lessons that came out of the report?
Sure. So the involvement that we had is that Brian Martin, who's my boss, the CEO of 8x8, was the chairman of the Emerging Technologies and New Applications Working Group. And what this initiative was really, as you mentioned, it was directed by Governor Schwarzenegger, and it was designed to, first of all, map, you know, how broadband was being used in the state of California. And some of the data that we got there was that currently 96% of Californians actually had access to broadband, but only about 50% of the state currently subscribe to that broadband. So somehow or other, we need to find a way not only to make that 96% closer to 100% as much as possible, but also to encourage more people who have access to actually sign up and use the broadband. And so there are a number of initiatives there that came out of this this task force to say, you know, what can we do as a state to encourage more demand for this and therefore encourage more people to sign up. And, you know, I think that there are a number of things like a statewide e-health network, for example, with, you know, real-time video conferencing, you know, electronic health records, and remote disease monitoring were some of the ideas. And, of course, e-learning and education online is also a potentially major use of that broadband access. And so I think the idea behind this is to make broadband more like a utility, you know, in the same way that you'd consider electricity, water, and roads. We should be considering broadband, and we're hoping that this California initiative would be something that would then be, you know, mirrored and copied by other states throughout the union to really propel the United States into a more of a broadband society.
That makes a lot of sense. And, of course, as broadband becomes more ubiquitous, adding services such as things like your SMB service becomes that much easier, right? I mean, that's you've got to have broadband to be able to take advantage of these advanced services.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're not purely altruistic about this, of course. the benefits to 8x8 as a company, of course, is as broadband becomes completely ubiquitous, it certainly means that we have potentially more customers subscribing to our service, yes.
And regarding the target market of SMBs, which seems to be doing so well lately, are there other things that you're looking to provide, other services that we can expect from your company?
Well, we're always innovating. You know, as you know, we have a huge patent portfolio. We actually have had 70 issued patents, although, to be honest, we did actually sell a couple of patents recently. So I guess we currently own 68 patents, but we have a number of others in the pipe. Our technology is something that we continually innovate. And I think, you know, probably a good example of that would be a couple of products that we released in 2007. One of them was the what we call the Complete Contact Center, which is a hosted call center application that that works with our hosted voice over IP virtual office service and is designed for, you know, hosted call centers. And we also very recently released our Tango video phone, which we've been selling to consumers over the last year or so. We released a version of that that completely integrates with the virtual office service. And, you know, we're quite excited by that because when we make sales to our consumers, they're generally sales that we don't really touch the customer. It's kind of a website transaction and we don't really, you know, touch the consumer. But when we make sales to the small businesses, we generally have more of a high-touch type process where we're talking to them and explaining the service. And as part of that explanation, we're now able to really, you know, sort of present to them the advantages of using video telephony as part of their virtual office service. And we're already starting to see some more success in terms of video phone sales associated with the small business sales that we make as opposed to the consumers.
So I'm glad you mentioned video because that's just, there's been a lot of news today actually in the video market. And a question I have there is in terms of pricing, what seems to be the sweet spot for pricing a video?
Well, what we've done is kind of more akin to a cellular phone model in that we've subsidized the video phone a little bit. We developed a pretty low-cost video phone, and we sell it to our subscribers, both the consumer and the business, for $99, which we think is a terrific price. And the nice thing about it is if you look at our pricing for our services, you'll notice that we don't charge any extra for using the video phone as part of your service, in that, you know, as a consumer, it's a $24.99 per month service, and that's for an ATA-type phone service or using the video phone, which actually acts as an ATA as well, and it enables you to make unlimited video phone calls as well as audio calls, and we don't charge any extra in the service for that. So it's literally a one-time cost associated with the product itself, which is $99 after rebate.
Well, that seems very reasonable. And do you have any stats on how many of these that a family would buy or a business would buy?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, when we were chatting at Internet Telephony, I think we've been a little disappointed in terms of our consumer sales for the video phone. It's really, you know, we're a publicly traded company. We've frequently indicated that we have about 5% of our subscribers are video phone subscribers, which is a pretty small, you know, percentage, and we'd certainly obviously like to see that much larger. And so, you know, from the consumer side, I think we kind of, you know, we haven't really found the magic bullet. But this is why, as I mentioned before, I think the launch of the product in conjunction with Virtual Office and using it with a small business, we believe will, you know, significantly improve that type of percentage. But, you know, it's very, very early days, and I guess you'll have to ask me the same question in, you know, 6 months, 6 to 12 months, and we'll figure out exactly what we managed to do.
Well, I wonder if, Adam, I don't mean to get ahead of you and put ideas in your R&D department's heads, but maybe the mobile application might be something that would help the adoption of the video phone. I mean, just having the ability to do a video conference from the road seems like a really interesting application. Of course, the phones would have to change a little bit because I know on my smartphone, my camera's on the back.
Yes. So you'd certainly have to put the camera on the front. You've also got to have sufficient bandwidth. I mean, it's fine if you're in a hotspot, but, you know, again, on the data networks from the cellular providers, you probably just don't have sufficient, or at least not sufficient, you know, quality bandwidth to be able to do an impressive video call. But, you know, it's coming, but it's not quite here today.
So, and speaking of the bandwidth, do you have any comments on providing QoS and reliability to SMB customers over lines which are not necessarily your broadband lines?
Yeah, so that's a question we get asked a lot, and the answer is that we don't control that last mile connection or indeed the customer's local area network. However, we've done a lot of work as a company in terms of developing as good a quality as we can, given the state of that last mile connection. And what I say is that, you know, if you have a poor last mile connection, then it, you know, no voice over IP provider is going to be able to provide you with good service. But the good news is that we see that that's very rare now. You know, a few years ago, that was more of a problem. These days, and it's when I say it's really only affecting about 5% of our customers that sign up for our service. We find that about 5% of them have some kind of issue that we need to fix, which means that 95% of them are getting the product, installing, self-installing, plug and play, and it's working just fine. But for that 5%, we're obviously not happy with that, and we need to find ways to improve that. So a couple of things we've noticed. The first one is that the last mile connection is actually getting a lot better, as I mentioned, which means that the majority of those that 5% problems are actually on the local area network, not on the on that last mile connection. And what we've done is we've recently introduced a new tool, voiptest.packet8.net, where you can test your connection to see if it's VoIP ready. It'll test things like latency, packet loss, and jitter. And basically, if you've got, you know, reasonable latency, hopefully close to zero packet loss, and you know, jitter of less than, you know, 40, 50 milliseconds, something like that, then you should have no problems in getting a quality voice over IP connection. So that's the first thing we're doing. But we're doing something else that's, I think, even more innovative, because, you know, there are people that have these tests as well. So I don't think that's quite so innovative. But what's really innovative is that we're starting to use protocol known as RTCP to gather data from our customers' endpoints, so from their video phones or virtual office phones and ATAs, etc. Now, as you gather these statistics, that's a lot of data. You know, you've got hundreds of thousands of customers, but there's a lot of packets of data there. And what we're trying to do is develop some data mining techniques such that we're able to proactively monitor all of our customers' connections simultaneously. And proactively, you know, discover that a customer's connection, either their local area network or their wide area network connection, is starting to deteriorate in some way. And measuring those kind of patterns, the idea being that we can then call that customer and say, "Mr. Customer, we think your network's having some problems, and it may start to affect your voice calls shortly if you don't do something about it. So how can we let's help you troubleshoot it, and before you get to the point where you have a problem, we'll help fix it."
Wow, that's great. And it's first of all, I think that's fantastic that you're doing it. And second of all, I have a question, which it's ironic that I'm asking the same person such a technical question, or I guess a question that has such a technical answer, and now I'm going to shift over into the realm of marketing, because a lot of people I've spoken with have said that your accomplishments have been quite impressive in the financial realm, because you found a way to market be profitable while you've got a competitor who has more or less decided that they would spend any amount of money to gain market share. And so the credit goes to your ability to market cost effectively and obviously have a low rate of churn, et cetera, things that have made your business work out well. Do you want to discuss a little bit about your marketing?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, the key there is to be effective with your marketing and also efficient. The issue that we see with many of our competitors is that they, you know, as you mentioned, seem to be prepared to spend almost any amount to acquire a subscriber, which, you know, the customer acquisition cost it really gets a little out of control. And, you know, certainly on the consumer side, you know, some of our competitors are spending in excess of $300 to $400 to acquire a subscriber, which in our mathematics doesn't make sense in terms of being able to generate any kind of return. When you're marketing to the small business, it's a tough that is a tough market to get to. Small businesses don't necessarily look at, you know, the same resources in order for, you know, gathering information when they're looking to change their phone service or looking for voice over IP. So we have to be quite creative in terms of how we efficiently get to the small business market who might be looking for those services. And you know, there's a number of ways to do it. You can look at it vertically or horizontally. Vertically would mean, you know, looking at a specific market, and a good example of that for us would be the real estate market, which was very good for us in 2007, but has obviously deteriorated somewhat in the beginning of 2008 here. And we did some pretty effective marketing in some of the real estate magazines, for example. But for the most part, what we found is that vertical marketing doesn't work particularly well for this type of service, and so we're really more horizontally based. And advertising, you're always looking at, you know, frequency and reach as being the two things you look for example. And what we found is that it's better to go for a wider reach, even with less frequency, than it is to have a higher frequency with a narrow reach. So we a lot of our, you know, I won't go through all the details, but we have a lot of different ways that we try to hit those small businesses and to get the maximum reach possible so that people know about our service. Because, you know, once they know about it, once they give us a call, we generally sign them up. So it's really a matter of gaining, you know, access or getting their share of mind, and of course, once we have them as a customer, referrals and word of mouth is just a fabulous way to market. So, of course, we do a lot of that, and we encourage that, and we certainly get a lot of referrals. We also, as I think I've mentioned to you once or twice before, had a very long-standing partnership with Pitney Bowes, the postage meter guys, and their customer base is almost identical to ours in terms of its makeup. They're about 10-person businesses are their typical customer, and we've had a great relationship with them marketing to their customer base through multiple methods, multiple media, you know, we are considering, you know, we always look for those types of partnerships and arrangements as well.
Well, that's great. Well, whatever it is, it sounds like it's working. And for the audience, I should just point out that the vertical market approach is when you start looking at an industry by industry, whereas you're looking for, let's say, hospitality or looking for retail, restaurants, et cetera, whereas a horizontal would be more across the board where you're looking at a number of different industries simultaneously, not really divvying up one industry by another industry.
Yep.
Another question which comes up a lot in our space, and, you know, 4 years ago we wouldn't have thought that this was going to be an issue, but it is. It's the intellectual property and patents, and you mentioned patents earlier, and, you know, I've frequently written about how many patents your company has and how impressive that is. How does that fit into the future of your company in terms of protecting yourself from lawsuits and possibly using those patents in a way that could be monetized?
So it's a very important part of our business. I think people kind of forget about it a little bit because they kind of sit there in the background. But we think, first and foremost, we think that our patent portfolio is something that is a great sort of deterrent or defense for us. So, you know, if somebody is thinking about suing us, they better be really careful because I pretty much guarantee if they did, we'd be digging through our patent portfolio and looking at, you know, counter-suing. And you know, I think that has probably staved off a number of potential companies who have maybe been litigious in this industry so far. There are no guarantees, of course. I'm not saying we won't ever be sued. It could be sued tomorrow. Who knows? But we think that it's a very strong defensive patent portfolio. In addition to that, of course, there are ways to monetize. We haven't, to this point, we've not been litigious ourselves in terms of being aggressively pursuing others for patent infringement. But there are also other ways to generate money out of patents, which not least of which is, you know, some licensing arrangements. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier, Last quarter, we actually sold two of our non-core patents, some older patents that we no longer really use ourselves. We sold those two patents. So there are a number of different ways to monetize your intellectual property. As I said, we've been developing these technologies, voice and video communications technologies now for many years, and we did spend the time and the effort to go ahead and patent those inventions, and I'm very pleased that we did, and also believe that that will stand us in great stead going forward in terms of, as I say, this defensive posture plus the ability to monetize them over time.
Well, thanks, Hugh. Are there any other things that you wanted to mention in closing?
I don't think so. I think we covered kind of everything that we covered in the chat we had before. I mean, we see, perhaps the only thing I'd say in closing is that, we think, I think as I mentioned the last time we chatted, that I thought 2007 was a year where I personally saw a little change in the way businesses are buying voice over IP services. In that prior to 2007, there was a lot of questions about, is this high enough quality? Is it reliable? I'm a little scared about going this voice over IP route. And that changed in 2007. I think I saw those kind of questions almost disappear, not completely, but significantly less in terms of, people have accepted now that voice over IP is a technology that's matured and is real and is high quality and high reliability. And I think that stands not just, 8x8, but the entire industry in great stead as we go forward in 2008. So I think it's kind of onwards and upwards from here. I'm feeling very bullish, notwithstanding, of course, the general economic conditions. But as I think I also mentioned before, is those general economic conditions, as they tend to turn a little sour, is not necessarily bad for a voice over IP service provider that's saving businesses money and saving costs. That can actually play somewhat in our favor.
And I've been hearing that a lot. I mean, Hugh, I should mention to you that and this is probably a good time for the listeners to hear this as well. And that is that a lot of people in the industry have been telling me that the cost savings has been it seems like something that's boosted their business, as people might be considering that the economy is going to slow down depending on the sector they're in, and it seems like a very positive thing for the market that they're people are willing to look at the technology as a money saver and also a productivity booster at the same time.
Yes.
Good news.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll see how this year plays out for the market. And the other thing that you mentioned was real estate, and I've been hearing from a couple other companies in the industry as well that real estate is obviously a little bit of a challenge for them going forward. So we'll see in aggregate how this plays out. But it sounds like I've been hearing a lot of bullish feedback from the IP communication space. I appreciate your time, Hugh. This was great. This has been a TMCNet podcast. My name is Rich Tarani. I'm the group editor-in-chief here at TMC and TMCNet, and we've been interviewing today Hugh Rees, who's the VP of Sales and Marketing of 8x8, who, of course, they are the company behind the very popular Packet 8 service. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.